Ronald, the politics of aging, can we support people who live until they're 120, 150? They keep talking about Social Security, for example, going broke. And also, would a 120 or 150-year-old, I mean, hobble around, get around, and just exist, or will he have some vigor to his life?
Okay, George, thanks for asking that question. It's a tough one, and an important one. I mean, there's no sense keeping people alive to 150 if
they can't function.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that would be a terrible drain on society. It would be, you know, it'd be like the island of Dr. Moreau, right?
Yeah, exactly, or Soylent Green.
Okay, and we wouldn't want to do that. I agree with you entirely, and that's really not what anti-aging medicine is about. So let me just digress here for a second. Anti-aging medicine is nothing more than a euphemism for advanced preventive medicine. Anti-aging medicine is the application of any technology that has to do with the early detection, prevention, treatment, and or reversal of aging-related diseases. You see, we at the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, and we're a nonprofit 501c3 corporation. We're a public charity, and we're an educational society, essentially. We're a medical society, an international medical society, the A4M, which is, you know, the acronym for American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, has some 14,000 physicians and scientists as members from, right now we're about 75 different countries around the world is how we're represented through the academy.
Mm-hmm.
And we do conferences all over the world and basically report on new technologies that have to do with breakthroughs in aging-related disease. In any case, to answer your question, no, we're not for 120-year-old people in wheelchairs and on ventilators or being fed through their through a tube up their nose. Anti-aging medicine is really all about the quality of life, and we believe that people should be able to live as long as they possibly can, as long as they have a great quality of life. And so what we're looking for is we're looking for methods of intervening in the mechanisms of aging-related disease. By so doing, we believe that people can live longer, healthier, happier lives than anyone ever thought possible. And that's already happening. I mean, look at all the 80- and 90-year-olds right now, even 100-year-olds, who are fully functional, who are living a great quality of life, who enjoy every day, and who are not a drain on society.
What are the steps involved, scientifically, medically, to allow us to take that leap,
okay,
to go from where we are to where we should be in 20, 30, even 50, 100 years from now?
Well, it's not going to take that long. As a matter of fact, the World Health Organization has mirrored the position of the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. That is that 50% of the baby boomers who are alive and healthy today will live to see their 100th birthday and beyond in excellent health.
50%? That's huge.
It is amazing. And so that's what's available to almost every one of your listeners.
I get my Social Security money back, Ronald.
I hope so. But, you know, for the people who are concerned about Social Security, anti-aging medicine is a good news story and a good news story and a good news story, and perhaps that's been our bane, is that there's really no legitimate argument against anti-aging medicine. We're not for keeping people on ventilators. We're for keeping people healthy and functional as long and as late into life as possible, and by applying early detection methods for treatment and advanced biotechnology for the treatment of aging-related disease, we can push back aging-related disease later and later in life, so it saves the economy tremendous amounts of money, and it allows people to maintain their functionality later and later and later into life. And what we're going to have to choose as a country, if people start living healthy into their, if they already are living healthy into their 80s, but into their 90s, 100s, and beyond, we're going to have to choose between, do we want to be able to have that extra 20 years, 30 years of excellent, you know, health and extended lifespan, or do we want to have Social Security? So Social Security age will be continued to ratchet upward.
That's true. Good point.
But people won't need Social Security, because the reason why Social Security was put there in the first place was the assumption that people could no longer work, they could no longer take care of themselves, that they were feeble, and that they were going to, be in such ill health that they were going to die soon.
Well, assuming, though, the economy begins and stays robust, I shouldn't even say stay, because, just today I was reading an article in my hometown newspaper in St. Louis, where, SBC Communications is thinking of terminating 20,000 jobs in that area. I mean, so what happens to the older, and we see what happens now. I've got a friend who's in his 50s. He's been outsourced for, either a separate company that has lower paying employees because they don't have to pay him the kind of money he was paying. I bet that gets worse as you get older. I mean, if a guy's got a job at 50 and he's a corporate executive, they're not going to keep him around when he's 120, are they?
No, they're not. Well, this is another issue altogether. I mean, we have a lot of important issues to decide upon as a society. If you have the basis that life is sacred and that living a good, long, healthy life is a good thing in our society, then we're going to have to come to some decision as to how we're going to allow people to live their lives, because they're not going to have one lifespan. They're going to have two or three compared with our grandparents. Our grandparents only, average lifespan was in their 50s.
Well, that's true. That's true. But as you say, and there's two different approaches here, too. I mean, on one hand, you've got the science of this done by tremendous people like you who truly care about humanity. And then you got that socioeconomic problem of what do we do with them once they start living this long?
Well, that's an interesting conundrum. I would argue that we have, or we are on the cusp of technology with robotics and with artificial intelligence computer systems and with advances in genetic engineering, et cetera, of, of so many different aspects of nanotechnology, that we will be able to generate more than enough goods and services and produce and products through technology to feed and clothe and entertain our entire population, with probably 20% or less of our population actually involved in day-to-day work activities.